Only one miracle from the life of Christ appears in each of the Gospels. It is the feeding of the 5,000. The details in each of the accounts are remarkably similar, although there are some aspects that are unique to each account. For example, only in this account do we find the Lord's question to the disciples, "How many loaves have ye? Go and see." Only in John's account do we encounter the statement concerning the Lord that he himself knew what he would do. On the other hand, each account includes the information that there were 5,000 men present on this occasion. Men, to say nothing of the women and children. So a very great multitude of people who had come from various distances away. The boy who gave his lunch to the Lord's disciples had 5 loaves of bread. Again, not loaves in the way in which we think of them, but smaller pieces of bread, 5 loaves of bread, and 2 small fish. The time of the day was a factor in the urging of the disciples that the Lord cease his teaching for that day so that he could send the people away to provide for their own meals. The way in which the Lord directed that the people sit down in ranks is something also that we read in each account, as well as the count of the remains of the meal after everyone ate to contentment. One significant aspect of this miracle is that it lacked the dramatic impact of so many others that the Lord did. It wasn't the raising of someone from the dead. You could tell that immediately. It wasn't the restoration of sight to the blind. It wasn't the cleansing of a leper. It wasn't the casting out of a demon. This miracle happened almost invisibly. Only by considering the situation beforehand and the amount of the remains afterward could the disciples come to the awareness that Jesus did something stupendous. In the minds of the disciples, there were severe limitations. You can hear those limitations in their statements and in their questions. There was nothing to eat. Where the large multitude was, there was nothing to eat. So the disciples said that the Lord must dismiss them so that they could visit the local establishments in the nearby villages to buy something to eat. When the Lord said to the disciples that they should provide the people with their food, the disciples responded with incredulity. They challenged the Lord as to how they could ever obtain enough food to feed all the people. 200 penny worth would amount to about $50 for us, and we can see why the disciples were incredulous. Even if they had that money, which we don't know they did, and could find a source of food from which to buy, the best they could hope to obtain, they thought, was that everyone could have just a few bites. In John's account, Philip said, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. But in the face of the difficulties, the Lord knew what he would do. And here's the great comfort of this incident. The Lord always knows what he is going to do. We see the limitations we focus on the smallness of the resources. But the Lord uses those limitations to expound the wonder of His power. And what He did on that occasion went far above anything that any of the disciples could have thought was possible. The people who heard the Lord on that day, which was an actual day in history, were going to receive more than they could ever have thought was possible. They were to experience satisfaction beyond expectation. Satisfaction beyond expectation. I want you to think upon that theme with me this morning. This gospel vignette, as we have chosen to call these incidents, presents to us the sweep of the desperate needs of human souls and the divine power that Christ displays to meet those needs. Human resources are meager. They really are completely insufficient. But Christ's ability transcends all that meagerness. Christ displayed His power on this occasion as the Creator. And I want you to think about that, because what was required here in this miracle was the actual creation of material, of bread and fish from the boy's meager resources. As long as the disciples were passing out the food to the people, the Lord was providing additional bread and fish by means of miraculous power. The incident brings to our minds the situation of the widow woman of Zarephath from the life of Elijah. And that was an incident to which the Lord Himself made specific reference in His initial public sermon in Nazareth. We read of that incident in 1 Kings 17, where in the midst of the famine, the Lord sent Elijah to this woman, and she said, "We have hardly anything left. I'm going to prepare a final meal, and then my son and I are going to die." Elijah said, "Make me a cake first." So she did. And then for the rest of the famine, we read in 1 Kings 17 that the meal did not fail. The cruse of oil did not fail. By a continuing miracle, the Lord provided for the needs of that woman. In the case before us today, the disciples could see only what they didn't have. Jesus saw what He was going to do. So we have to learn to focus not on what we don't have, but on that which the Lord has purposed to accomplish. When we look at this passage today, there are four aspects of it that require our attention. First, impossible examination. Impossible examination. Now, what had happened here was that the Lord, as we read in verse 32, the Lord and His disciples went in a ship again across the Sea of Galilee, this time to the eastern side, to the other side. Not exactly to the place of the Gadarenes where they were before, but to a place where there was really no habitation. But the people sensed that's where they were going. So they went by foot around the shore of the Sea of Galilee until they got where the Lord was going, and they were there when He arrived. And the Lord taught them, as we read in verse 34. He began to teach them many things. He was preaching to them the gospel. Now, while the Lord was doing that, the disciples looked over the crowd, and they really didn't have any ears for what the Lord was saying. They were thinking about the practicalities of the situation. Now, they didn't have watches, but they could watch the sun, and they knew that as the sun was heading farther and farther down in the western part of the sky, it was getting later and later in the day, and they were concerned that the people had nothing to eat, and there was nothing to eat where they were. And the irony of their words to the Lord here lies in the assumption he didn't really comprehend the unsuitableness of this location for the provision of what the people needed for their sustenance. He was teaching the gospel. He wasn't thinking about what was needed there. And the lateness of the hour, as we read here in verse 35, when the day was now far spent, the Jews had a way of reckoning time. They divided the days and nights up into portions of 3 hours, so that at 3 p.m., they would judge that the day was far spent. So it was after 3 p.m. The Jews reckoned that is the beginning of evening. And then when the sun would set, that would be the second evening of the day. So when the day was now far spent, it was time to think about wrapping up what you were doing and allowing the people the opportunity to look after their own needs. So the disciples, if you can appreciate the irony, came to the Lord and gave him their direction. Send them away. Send them away. In other words, they're saying to the Lord, you've been teaching them all these things, and that's fine, but now let's think about their practical needs. They need to eat. So send them away. In their minds, the Lord was an idealist and was speaking of the loftiest ideas, but they didn't think he had a very tight grasp of the practicalities. They thought they understood the problems that they perceived. And I don't think they were alone in their assumptions. I think often we tend ourselves to assume that we understand our problems far better than the Lord does. But Jesus extended their challenge, for they were already in the examination room, by saying to them in reply, give ye them to eat. Give ye them to eat. In Matthew's account, the Lord said, they need not depart. I don't need to send them away. Give ye them to eat. Now, I want you to think about that and in your minds ponder the scene with the disciples, having given this directive and receiving one in return, looking at each other, rolling their eyes, exhaling in frustration, because this was impossible. Jesus was saying, give ye them to eat. It was impossible. They said to Jesus, in effect, you can't be serious. You expect us to provide food for all these people? Do you know how much that's going to cost? Where are we going to get that kind of money? So they considered what Jesus said as the most preposterous response to the situation. They thought they knew how to handle the problem. Send them away. Send them away. But from the examination, they were about to proceed to a further challenge. And that's the second aspect of the passage we confront, insistent education. insistent education. It's striking that Jesus did not respond directly to their instruction. You notice that? They said, send them away. He said, give ye them to eat. They said, how in the world can we do that? He could have taken offense that they were presuming to instruct him. But he knew what he was going to do. So he used the occasion for education. Verse 38. How many loaves have you? They were focusing on what they didn't have. He said, how many loaves have you? So instead of complaining about what you don't have, Jesus was teaching them, consider what is available. Consider what has been provided. Now, here was a huge crowd. Thousands and thousands of people. And you can almost see them looking stupefied. We don't have anything. Was Jesus really asking that question? And then, in case they hadn't caught on to it, he said, go and see. That is, go through the crowd and see what's available. So they went to see, no doubt with the attitude, this isn't going to do any good. But they found somebody who had some food. It was a boy. We read of him in some of the other accounts. He's called a lad, a young boy. Maybe just on the threshold of being what we would call a teenager. He was a boy. He had come with the rest of the people to hear Jesus, and his mother apparently provided for him a little lunch, and all that he had in the lunch, 5 loaves of bread and 2 small fish. And in John's account, Andrew referred to the boy's meager lunch with the question, but what are they among so many? Oh yes, this is, how many loaves have ye? Well, we've got 5 and 2 fish, but they're small. So they were still focusing on what they didn't have and on the smallness of their resources. But Jesus knew what he was going to do. And that brings me to the third aspect of this passage, imperative organization. Imperative organization. And let's just look at what the Lord said in verse 39. He commanded them, that is the disciples, to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass. Only Mark refers to the color of the grass here as being green. So it was a very nice area, apparently, a hillside, no doubt. And they sat down by companies. And we read in verse 40, in ranks, by hundreds and by fifties. That is, they went through this large crowd and they divided them up into smaller groups. So that here you had a group of 50, maybe here a group of 100, but they were all in groups, in rows, in ranks, so that it would be easier then to distribute food to them. So here again we learn that the work of Jesus Christ involves order. It involves organization. It's not simply to be done helter-skelter. Because to distribute food to this group of people was going to require the task to be broken into smaller parts. So that was the order for the organization that he gave. And everything in the Lord's work proceeds according to organization, proceeds according to order. The youth camp that's coming up doesn't just happen. You don't get everybody together and say, okay, let's decide now what we're going to do. No, for months in advance. Members of the staff are working out the details. Not only what we're going to do generally, but what we're going to do at this time on this day. And what if it rains? Well, then we're going to do this in that place. So the Lord said, get them all organized. Make it easier for the disciples. Make it easier for everybody else. And when the preparation was ready, when the organization was ready, then came the last of these aspects of the passage, imposing demonstration. Striking here that the Lord did not say when they told him, we have 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Go and look again. It's not enough. You're going to have to have more than that. He knew what he was going to do. And so we read in verse 41, when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves. He looked up to heaven to do what? To give thanks unto God, who is the true provider of all our blessings, of all our food. It is something that we try to teach our children to do, to give God thanks for their food. He looked up to heaven and blessed, seeking for the blessing of God upon what this boy had brought and had offered to them. And after he did that and broke the loaves, he gave them to his disciples. And the implication is he divided this food up among the 12 disciples. Yes, Judas Iscariot would have been present on this occasion. He broke up the food, divided it among them, and then said, you begin to pass it out now to the multitude. And they did. And no doubt the disciples thought, well, this isn't going to take very long. We're going to run out of this food very quickly. But it went down the rows, and the next row, and the next row, and the disciples must have wondered as they looked at the baskets were still full of food. Down the rows they went. Person after person took of the food. And everybody ate. Everybody ate. Not only did they eat, but we read in verse 42, they were filled. They were satisfied. They couldn't have any more. They were satisfied. And we read in verse 43 that they collected the remains, the fragments, the leftovers, we would say. They collected those things elsewhere. So Jesus said, so that nothing is lost. Nothing was to be thrown away. So they collected the baskets full of the fragments. And how many baskets were there? There were 12. So that each of the disciples collected a basket of fragments, and that basket was full. Even more so than when they began distributing the food. Because these baskets were not small vessels. So the amount of what was left was far beyond the limits of that lunch the boy offered to provide. The people ate to their satisfaction. Now the disciples had an expectation When the Lord set this food before the multitude, and their expectation was it wasn't going to be enough. And yet all the people were filled. So Jesus was creating bread and fish as those baskets passed along. And at the end, there was far more than that with which they began. And so they provided evidence of an amazing statement that we find in Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. And let us just look at that statement. Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. Ephesians is to be the theme of our youth camp this year. In chapter 3 of Ephesians, and verse 20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus throughout all ages, world without end. Amen. Notice the emphasis. He is able to do, and how he piles up the words here, exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. There would be things that we would ask, and there would be things we wouldn't dare to ask because they seem to us impossible. But here, on the occasion of the feeding of the 5,000, there was a situation where they thought it was impossible. But they were satisfied. Beyond expectation. The people there thought they would get something to eat, maybe a little snack to tide them over until they could get something more substantial, but they were satisfied. It was beyond their expectation. And the work that the Lord did on that occasion was really, for that occasion, the providing of those people with the food that they needed. But there is a significant application, which we find in the Gospel of John chapter 6. The Gospel of John chapter 6. In verse 25, after they had gone back across the Sea of Galilee, we read that when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered and said, and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. So he said, you came seeking after me, not because of your desire for any spiritual truth, but because you ate the food. So don't be concerned with that. Be concerned with the spiritual benefit. For we read in verse 32, Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, that is the manna, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And notice the response of Jesus in verse 35. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. So here was the message of the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus is saying, I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life. To eat of him is to believe on him. It is to trust in him. We look further down in the chapter where he emphasizes it again in verse 48. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. Jesus is saying, here's the true significance of the miracle. He is the bread of life. You must trust in him. You must believe upon him. He is the only answer for the supply of the deepest need of your soul. A lot of people today are more concerned with having enough food for their bodies, and that is not a trivial concern. But there are a lot of people who have more than they can eat, but their souls are in desolation. And if they do not eat of the bread of life, they will come to perish in hell forever. So there's the true message of satisfaction beyond expectation. Be sure that you trust in Christ. Be sure that you rest on him so that you will know it is well with your soul.